All right, well, welcome to the Statesman Journal's Explore Oregon podcast. I'm your host, Zachary Ness, and in each episode, we highlight Oregon's most beautiful and interesting places. In today's show, we're talking about the rebound of one of Oregon's most iconic fish. When I recently joined Oregon Public Broadcasting show, Think Out Loud. Before we get rolling, I want to highlight the sponsors of this podcast that make it possible for us to hire and pay our outdoor journalism interns every spring, summer, and fall. Our first sponsor is the American Forest Resource Council, supporting responsible forestry on public lands throughout the Pacific Northwest. Learn more at amforest.org. We're also supported by Visit Tillamook Coast, a land of ocean and forest just an hour from the Willamette Valley that this spring will offer special volunteer vacations, designed for visitors to spend a day doing a stewardship project and another headed out on a Tillamook Coast adventure. We'll have more details on this a little bit later in the show. Finally, we're brought to you by the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, that reminds visitors to leave no trace and buy local firewood when camping at state parks to limit the spread of invasive insects. All right, let's get into our conversation about wild winter steelhead. But first, here's some guitar music to get us rolling. All right, well, welcome to today's short edition of the Explore Oregon podcast. I know that we've been a little slow with episodes this month, but we've got a really good collection of them coming very soon. In the meantime, I thought I'd post this conversation that I had with Think Out Loud host Dave Miller on OPB on Tuesday. Dave rang my bell to talk about a story that I wrote about the best winter steelhead runs in the Upper Willamette Basin in two decades. We talked about what steelhead fishing means and what kind of species they are. We talked about why their runs were improving. And we, you know, thought about whether this is a lasting thing. Because look, we don't get a whole lot of good news about fish very often. So this was worth talking about. One quick thing that I'll mention before we get to the podcast is that Dave found out about this story because he's on an email list for the Explore Oregon newsletter. I think most of you know this by now, but the podcast is just a small part of my job at the Statesman Journal and Register Guard. My main gig is writing news and feature stories, often 3 to 5 stories per week. Some of that work makes it onto the podcast, but a lot doesn't. So if you want to stay up to date on the latest news in Oregon's outdoors, just send me an email at zernes@statesmanjournal.com. You can find that email at the end of every story that I write. And I will add you to the newsletter list, and you'll be in the loop. Okay, let's get to that conversation.
From the Gerd Boyle Studio at OPB, this is Think Out Loud. I'm Dave Miller. We talk so often about diminishing fish returns in the Northwest that good news, reports of increases can come as a big surprise, but that is exactly what happened with winter steelhead in the Upper Willamette Basin. Their latest numbers, according to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, are the highest they've been in 20 years. Zach Ernest is the outdoors editor for the Statesman Journal and hosts the Explore Oregon podcast. He joins us now with the details. Zach, welcome back.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me back.
I want to start with the real basics because we haven't actually talked about steelhead for a while. What are steelhead?
Yeah, so steelhead are trout that migrate to the ocean and then return to spawn. It varies, but they often spend about, 2 years in freshwater rivers, 2 years in the ocean before coming back. And because they head out to the ocean and they're feeding out there, they come back a lot stronger, a lot larger than the trout that stay home. So as an angler, I think catching a steelhead is one of the great thrills because they're just a big, fast, powerful, beautiful fish. I mean, I spent a lot of my younger years trying to catch steelhead on a fly rod with, sporadic success. They're sometimes known as the fish of 1,000 casts because you have to work hard for them, but when you hook them, it's really quite an experience.
Depending on the time of year, if you are going to get lucky enough or talented enough to hook one, you might either catch a wild one or a hatchery one. How do folks tell the difference?
Yeah, sure. So hatchery steelhead, which have been planted, they are missing their adipose fin. They have it clipped off. So they're actually missing a fin. So you can just look at the fish and tell whether it is hatchery or wild pretty easily. You can also get a hint on, the size. The wild fish tend to be larger. And then the time of year, so the North Sanam River, where I do a lot of fishing, the summer run of steelhead are hatchery fish and the winter run are wild native fish.
What are the different rules that govern the different runs?
Yeah, so that's going to depend on exactly where you're fishing. But in general, you're almost always able to harvest a hatchery fish or two, while there are typically stricter rules on wild native fish. So to go back to the North Sanam as an example, you can harvest a few hatchery summer steelhead, but you always have to release wild winter steelhead, which in this basin are protected as threatened under the Federal Endangered Species Act.
Your recent story focuses on wild winter steelhead in the Upper Willamette Basin. Can you just give us a sense for the area we're talking about?
Sure, yeah. So the Upper Willamette Basin includes everything above Willamette Falls. So from around Oregon City all the way to Salem and Eugene on the main Willamette. And then the basin includes just major tributaries like the Santiam, the Malala, the Yamhill, where, the steelhead go to spawn.
What were their historical numbers like?
There's not a reliable estimate that I've seen from the really old days, like way back. But it's fair to say they were just numerous and widespread. I've heard the number hundreds of thousands tossed around. It's hard to verify. But as far as counting numbers, by the 1960s and 70s, their runs would regularly be above 20,000 fish, sometimes up to 30,000 fish. But then by the 1990s, they really started to decline rapidly, down to just a few thousand by, sometimes in the 90s. By 99, they were listed as a threatened species. And then by 2017, their numbers really crashed all the way down to just 822 fish returning that year. Hasn't been as bad in recent years, mostly around 2,000 to 3,000, but it hasn't been great either.
So, not long ago, scientists were talking about an extinction vortex for winter steelhead. What does that phrase mean?
It just meant that at the low population that they had reached and the rate they were declining and how it was going, it was clear that they might not be able to replicate their numbers and they might just wink out or go extinct. So yeah, they were at a threat for just being gone.
What are the various reasons for their decline?
Well, it's a complicated issue, but the long-term answer is, tends to refer to what fish biologists call the H's. So that's the first one is just over harvest of fish, which has, happened over a long period of time. Another one is habitat loss in rivers. A third one is hydropower dams or just dams, which cut off massive amounts of spawning habitat, create abnormal water temperature and conditions in the rivers. So those are some of the big ones. People also talk about, interbreeding with hatchery fish being a problem. I think you have to include climate change and changes to the ocean. And then there are issues, local issues for specific basins. In ours, sea lions were an issue in the mid-2010s.
Well, let's turn to this year, the most returning winter steelhead in 20 years. One reason that was put forward was improved ocean conditions. What does that mean? What actually got better for these steelhead?
Yeah, and I did want to highlight how great this year has been. They dropped all the way down to 822 fish. And this year, the last, numbers that I looked at just this morning were 8,000 fish. And it should keep growing, which is really great. For the first time in a long time, anglers were catching and releasing them here and there. But yeah, you asked about ocean conditions. And in a nutshell, that just means there is more food in the ocean for the fish to eat. So they tend to do better. Back in the bad years around 2017, earlier, a lot of those fish had to deal with the notorious blob of warm water that was in the Pacific, led to very poor ocean conditions, meaning less food to eat. So it was harder in those years. Hmm.
You mentioned sea lions. What role has the killing, the word is culling, but I don't know, I still feel like killing is more
it's more accurate.
It's more
no, for
accurate.
Sure.
I like accuracy. What role has the federal government saying, yes, you can kill sea lions? What difference has that made?
It's made a big difference, but I'll give just a little bit of backstory there. You know, in the mid-2010s, you know, the fish numbers were already way down. They developed a kind of a troop of sea lions who had discovered that if they hung out by the fish ladder at Willamette Falls, they could just kind of have an all-you-can-eat buffet of steelhead. It was really easy for them to just scarf down a lot of them. Fish biologists estimated that they ate over 25% of the entire steelhead run for the upper Willamette Basin in a couple of years. And so the state went through a legal process to actually get approval to kill the sea lions that were feasting on the fish. And that's what they did. The state killed 45 sea lions all totaled. And it hasn't been a problem since, because I think they've discovered it's sort of a learned behavior. So once the sea lions are killed that have become habituated to this, you know, it doesn't, other sea lions don't necessarily come in to take their place. So it's worked out pretty well in their opinion.
All right. So we talked about improved ocean conditions, the culling, the killing of sea lions. What else might have played into the increase we're seeing now? I mean, 10 times more than something like 8 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, when you talk to fish biologists, they definitely say ocean conditions play the biggest role. Like, that's the single biggest thing. There has been better drought years, especially recently. So that does help. There's more water. It's a little healthier. Then again, though, I mean, the class of fish that were returning this year, I mean, they came of age during a pretty brutal 2021 drought, the 2020 Labor Day fire. So they didn't have a cakewalk. I mean, you could just say they're a tough, resilient fish, and this is a good year.
Hmm. You wrote back in December about another species that returning coho salmon numbers had smashed their earlier record. Is there a connection between these two increases?
Yeah, I would say, again, in talking to the fish biologists, I would say that in general, the better ocean conditions have been good for most of Oregon's ocean-going fish. Salmon and steelhead numbers have been up statewide, not universally, but in general, it's the runs have been better compared to recent years in a lot of different locations, not just here.
Hmm. Is there a reason to believe, whether we're talking about steelhead or coho, that this is more than a temporary increase? I mean, is there meaningful reason to hope?
That depends how optimistic a person you are. I mean, it is, when you look at historic numbers, it's pretty normal to see, you know, good ocean conditions leading to good runs of fish. But then when ocean conditions drop back down, the runs drop back down as well. If you're an optimist, you could point to efforts to improve dams and make them friendlier for fish that are ongoing. That's a huge entire other story in the upper Willamette Basin. You know, wild fish advocates point that if we just make rivers a little friendlier for fish, then, you know, improved habitat, better dam management, at least we give them a chance to thrive. And that's all they're looking for. And there is some evidence. The Clackamas is one that people talk about a lot, where if you just do a few things better for fish, then they'll thrive. You know, given that opportunity, they will. So, you know, they've held on this long against the, you know, fighting against the odds. So why not be an optimist? I think it's a lot more fun, no matter whether that ends up being true or not. You know, I choose to believe that it is possible for these runs to, you know, survive and thrive.
And it also seems like being an optimist is part of being an angler to begin with.
Yes, especially when you're fishing for steelhead.
Zach, thanks very much.
Thanks, Dave.
Zach Ernest is the host of the Explore Oregon podcast and the outdoors editor for the Statesman Journal. He joined us to talk about the biggest returning numbers for winter steelhead in the upper Willamette Basin in 20 years.
All right, that was my conversation with Think Out Loud host Dave Miller. Like I said at the top, we are going to return with a bunch of new episodes very soon. Before we go, here are the messages from our sponsors.
I'm Andy Geisler. I'm a forester at the American Forest Resource Council, and we're proud to sponsor the Explore Oregon podcast. Like you, I love the outdoors. On many days, the forest is my office. I work on the ground with public lands agencies on good forest management projects. Forest management helps achieve important conservation goals while providing sustainable timber. Science-based forestry helps improve wildlife habitat, outdoor recreation, clean air, and water. And it's essential to providing renewable, climate-friendly wood products. Learn more about us at amforest.org.
This message is brought to you by Visit Tillamook Coast. The Tillamook Coast Visitors Association is excited to bring back their Volunteer Adventures program for 2024 that will welcome groups from inside or outside Tillamook County to lend a hand in stewardship programs while also having a good time. One example of an itinerary would be spending one day clearing invasive brush or working on a hiking trail. The next would include something like a guided hike or kayak trip, the type of activity that highlights the Tillamook area and shows why doing stewardship projects is so important. All meals, lodging, and activities are included. The program is designed to offer participants the opportunity to give back to our popular area while also learning the vital role stewardship plays in preserving our natural places. If you want more information or to sign up early, search for Tillamook Coast Volunteer Adventures or email Dan Hagg at dan@tillamookcoast.com. Once again, that email is dan@tillamookcoast.com. Our third and final sponsor is the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department that invites Oregonians to explore parks this fall and winter to experience the beauty of those seasons. If you're camping, remember to get firewood from sources local to your destination to avoid bringing invasive insects, such as the devastating emerald ash borer, into parks. This will help preserve the health of Oregon's forests for seasons to come. Learn more about protecting Oregon's ash trees at stateparks.oregon.gov.